All right, welcome back to Labor Day Talking Baseball. Marty Lurie is off today. Bill Lasky filling in. And love talking baseball with our next guest. We're going to switch it over to the American League. Let's bring in Rich Waltz. He's in the NFL Network and works for CBS Sports. Good afternoon, Rich. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing good on a Labor Day. A little warm down here in Northern California. It's got to be cooler up in the area where you are, up in Seattle. But let's talk a little bit about the American League. A lot of things have changed, and winners are Tampa Bay has been a big surprise, and Chicago White Sox is another good team. Tell me your thoughts overall on the new faces and the new teams that are really uprising.
Well, look, I mean, if the playoffs were to start today, and that's a weird thing to say because it's only a 60-game season and there's, you know, Giants have, what, 19 left and other teams are 20, 21 left. But if it were to start today, the Rays, the White Sox, that's another team that everyone thought was going to be improved this year, and they certainly are. And across the Bay, the Athletics would take the divisions, the Indians, the Blue Jays, and then the Astros would be the second place teams in the division, and under the format this year, they would go. And then a really good Minnesota Twins team, and then the Yankees would be the wild card. So I don't see much of a difference between, you know, the top and the bottom of that playoff picture, especially with the Twins and the Yankees in the 7 and the 8 spot right now. So yeah, there's, you know, I'm not surprised by the Rays. They do more with less better than anybody in baseball, and they've done that for a long, long time. I love their manager. I love the way they play the game. The White Sox, everyone, I think, saw that coming. The A's have something to prove, certainly with, you know, finishing runner-up to the Astros the last 3 years. And, you know, look, the rest is, who knows? It's such uncharted territory with this playoff format. And remember,
it sure is, Rich. And on top of that, a 60-game season, everything is urgent. Everything, every game is so a momentum of how you're going to make this, how you're going to do this. And let's just stay with this AL West, Oakland and Houston. Houston coming into Oakland to play a 4-game series. And Dusty Baker, Bob Melvin, good friends of both of ours, going head-to-head. How do you think this is going to move forward with both these clubs?
Well, you know, the A's just had something that a lot of National League teams have had to deal with, and that's a long break because of the virus. And you never know how that's going to affect them. Some of those teams, Miami and St. Louis, actually played pretty well coming out of that break. I don't think there's a lot of pressure on either team in terms of getting to the postseason. I think they're both headed there, but there's still, as you know, and I grew up in the East Bay, and so I certainly follow all the Bay Area teams pretty closely. There's a lot of animus between the two, more so going from Oakland towards Houston, but Houston certainly doesn't like Oakland, but the A's really, really feel like this is a year for them, despite the virus and the shortened season, and an opportunity to you know, establish that, hey, they've deserved better, and that Houston probably, the win totals for Houston over the last 3 years were not legit, because everybody focuses on the National League opponents in the World Series and how they were possibly robbed. But I think the A's have a pretty good argument that they're probably ended up on the worst end of it as well. So that's a great series in that it's two good teams, two managers, as you mentioned, that are just, you know, love them both, and they don't like each other, and the A's really don't like the Astros. So I'm
all
in on that.
Well, if you remember, Rich, last time they played, they had a bench brawl. So, you know, this four-game series is going to be not just on the field, but who's going to be throwing at each other, and you know, all the animosity for both of them, and this is what's going to happen. And I tell you what, the Houston Astros have to be a lucky team not having fans in the stands, because this, for sure, a lot of A's fans would have been circling this on the calendar for this series. And you know, it's going to be a bump and grind series, no doubt about it. The A's just lost 2 out of 3 from San Diego, and like you said, the COVID-19 stopped them when they were playing good baseball. So they got to kick in here for this series. What do you see in a possible Houston Astros overcoming the Oakland A's in this series?
Well, I mean, the Astros haven't been playing well this last week. And as you noted, it feels like in this format, everything is overblown. Because people focus on one game in a 60-game schedule is worth, what, 2.7 in a 162-game schedule.
Yep.
And so you lose three games, and it's the equivalent of almost an eight or nine-game losing streak. That, to me, was a lot of the chatter going into the season. But the flip side of that is you win three, and that's and in the standings or, you know, whatever, the same as an eight or a nine game. It doesn't feel that way. I don't think teams, after they've swept the series, go, we just, you know, won eight games. It's business as usual. But the Astros aren't playing well right now. Oakland's had, you know, needs to get some of their bats going. The A's have done it without some of the normal guys swinging it. So, and it's weird, man. It's
like be interesting. It really is.
It's 3 weeks left in the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's 3 weeks left in the season. And normally you're 3.5 weeks left in the season, and it's like everybody's going to the mats, and it's everybody all hands on deck and all that. And it just feels like that hasn't started yet. But I think with Giants fans, too, the way the Giants have played, they've won, 12 of 17, all of a sudden – the Giants are in that group. They're in that playoff group. And just get in the group. Remember, home field doesn't mean a whole lot when there's nobody in the seats. And it's a best-of-three format in the first series.
Yeah. Well, Rich, let's stay in the AL West, and let's talk about the opponent that's coming into Oracle Park Tuesday and Wednesday. And they're playing good baseball, the Seattle Mariners. They've won five in a row. And they have a possibility of the AL Rookie of the Year in Kyle Lewis. Just an extremely great player. The range in the outfield is impressive. The athleticism in him, he can swing the bat. He's got seven home runs, knows the strike zone real well. And I would have to say the only one that's really going to compete against him for Rookie of the Year is Lewis Roberts from the White Sox. And I think these guys are going to go head-to-head all the way to the last week of the season.
Yeah, Lewis was a first-round pick back in 16. He hurt his knee, had a really bad knee injury. He's a college kid, Mercer University in Georgia. And, he really, really opened eyes at the end of last year in just a short stay in the big leagues. So, rather than look at his numbers just from this year, which is what, like 40 games or something, I threw his numbers from last year and this year together, and it's a whopping 57 games. So it's not a huge sample size.
Yeah.
But his slash line is a 300 average, 367 on base, 542 slug, 15 home runs in those 57 games. And he looks like he belongs. He doesn't look overmatched. He doesn't look, he's not making rookie mistakes and such. So he's a guy that certainly the Giants are going to be aware of. The other guy that's hot is the other Kyle. That's Kyle Seager. Giants fans obviously know his brother from the Dodgers. Kyle's been in the big leagues 10 years now. He's been an all-star. He's won a gold glove. The last 3 years he struggled, but this year he's, it's hard. I want to say he's got a career high in average and on base, but he's only played 40 games. So, but he's having a really good year. How's that sound?
I like him. I really do like Kyle Seager. And, I was looking him up the other day just to get a little more information on him. His nickname is Corey's brother. I just thought that was hilarious.
He's been a really solid guy. They really haven't been able to build a team around him, which is sad. But he's been there a long time. Giants are going to miss Seattle's best pitcher, by the way. I think Marco Gonzalez goes today. They're going to see a righty in L.J. Newsome tomorrow and a lefty in Marjovicius on Wednesday. So Seattle's hot, and, they're playing well, and they've, some of the young guys are starting to believe. And that's the
And they're still in the race. They're moving up. I mean, they could slide into that wild card, and you just thought, done. The Yankees are falling fast, and that's just going to be a disgrace in a Yankee uniform if they don't make the playoffs, especially all the money.
But like I said, you win three games, you sweep a series, and suddenly you're not just a wild card, you're the second place team. So it's. I was going through the postseason format this morning, and one thing I did not realize is that there are no tiebreaker games, so there's no extra games. So if someone ties for a division title or you're tied for that second place spot, there's no play-in games this year. It's all done by math. Head-to-head's the first record in your division, which subtracts the interleague. And then I think the third tiebreak is like your last 20 division games winning percentage. And for the Giants, it's a weird deal, right? Because they've got 19 games left. The teams that they're fighting for the wild card, Miami and the Phillies, both have had COVID stops and both have more games to play. Miami's got 25 games left. The Phillies have got 24. The Cards are in the two spot in their division. But they've got 28 games left to play compared to the Giants' 19. So that's the weird math. So don't look at like games behind. You almost have to just look at straight winning percentage.
And the other thing too, Rich, looking at the Giants' schedule, they're playing the Padres seven times, four in San Diego next week, and then they play them the last three games here. And also Colorado for four. So there are some tough opponents. They also play the A's for three. So these games right today, of course, the Diamondbacks and a great pitching matchup today here. And then they play Seattle for two. They go up to Seattle for two. But I always like talking about these teams that, hey, we can beat them. We should beat them. But this Mariner team, going back to them, they got a tough young team. And Scott Service has definitely pushed these guys the right way. Their bullpen's a lot of young arms. Their starting staff is a lot of unproven starters. And when you look at their minor league system, they traded, and they got a good amount of talent coming back. Taylor Trammell, Ty France, Luis Torres, Andre Munoz, who really nobody even knows, over 100 miles an hour from a right-hander. They are third in minor league rankings for the best minor league prospects. And the first is the Rays, second is the Padres, and third are the Mariners. That has to be a positive for the Seattle Mariner organization.
The last time the Mariners made the postseason, Ichiro was a rookie. 2001, it's the longest postseason drought in professional sports. And they've gone through so many different rebuilds, build up, build, tear down, that the hope for the Mariners is that this one sticks, right? That this is the one where these prospects are, you're able to develop them, then you can supplement them with some veteran arms and some veteran bats in the lineup. The fans up here are very forgiving. There isn't a lot of heat on the team. But I think you hit on it when you said Scott Service has done a nice job. I think when you get Manager of the Year awards at the end of this year, you're going to find some guys that maybe not are at the top of their divisions. I think Service is certainly, if Seattle keeps playing like this and they nudge in their way in, I think Service certainly is a guy that deserves consideration. I think in the National League, a guy like Don Mattingly, who took his team through the long COVID break and then lost 18 players and then came out and won games with those guys up from their replacement team. Those are the type of managers, the guys that were able to motivate teams that had reasons not to compete this year. And I know that sounds weird to say about a major league team, they have reasons not to compete, but you can just look up and down the standings. Teams that have not mailed it in, but these are tough circumstances and motivation right now. I mean, you're quarantined, you're not winning. There are teams that have kind of taken a turn south, and I think Arizona is clearly one of those teams. And to your point, Seattle is not one of those teams. They've had struggles, but they've won 11 of their last 15 going into the game this afternoon. So. You're right. The Giants are hitting them at the wrong time. But look, man, Donovan Solano and Yastrzemski and Brandon Belt hitting and all of that. It's all good stuff. This is I know for Giants fans, it's not their normal postseason ride, but it's a fun ride. It's when you got new heroes and guys that are coming through on a different guy every night, and they're starting to win and do things right. That's fun, and I'm excited for the Giants, and I hope the series against the Mariners goes well.
You know, one of the things, Rich, we're talking to Rich Waltz on KNBR this afternoon. You know, one of the things that I'm noticing, and of course, you know, I used to pitch, the starting pitchers really aren't getting too many wins. It's really going to the bullpens, and you start looking through all these teams, and the bullpens are the ones that have the wins and not the starters. A different kind of, you know, knowledge, a different kind of ways stats are sorted out. Your thoughts on how much bullpen is being used this year?
Well, look, I mean, what was the summer camp? 3 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
As much as we complain about spring training being too long, this is a great example of the value of a proper spring training for everybody, whether it's hitters or pitchers or starters. Because let's face it, the first 30 games across the board were pretty sloppy. From fielding to base running, you know, obviously pitchers not going deep. I don't think you're going to see that change a whole lot, even in the postseason. Complete games are a rarity. As I said, the Giants are going to miss Marco Gonzalez of the Mariners. He threw a complete game his last time out. So, yeah, I mean, I think especially with the added, you know, this was the year they were going to 26 men anyways in the roster, and they've expanded it. Because I think baseball realizes there wasn't enough time to get arms ready. You don't want to damage starters by pushing them too much. And if you can group it together with a really, really good bullpen, the teams that have had that thick pen, Padres are a really good example of that. That's been and the A's bullpen has been terrific too. And the Giants are sorting it out. So, that's, you know, that 26-man rule was one that was going in this year, the three-batter minimum. I'm curious for a guy like you, who's, you know, seen 40 games here, which of the new rules, the ones that were going to be in 2020, like the extra man on the roster and the three-batter minimum, or the ones that they implemented because of the short schedule, the extra inning rule, the no DH in the National League, any of those rules that you've liked or would consider keeping?
Well, Rich, I know my listeners know, because I don't mind the seven-inning doubleheaders. I don't mind that at all. I don't mind the three-batter minimum. I just can't stand that runner on second base in extra innings. It just is stupid. In the game of baseball, I don't like it. I hope they ship it right out for next year. I don't think it belongs in baseball. It's more of a softball thing. I coached softball for many years in high school, and it's great because the game is quicker. But in baseball, I just don't like it. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I was first exposed to that rule in the World Baseball Classic, and that was because of the lack of just what you're seeing now, the lack of pitching and the lack of pitching depth, I guess is a better way to say it. The one thing that I've seen with that rule that I like, in the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season when teams were going through it, in today's game, the modern-day swing is obviously geared to hit the ball out of the ballpark. That's how teams are built. That's how offenses attack pitchers. And the runner on second to start the inning has forced teams slowly, I think, to change into trying to move runners and do some little things and hit behind, you know, get a guy over, get a guy in. It's forced managers to manage more than you see in the regular nine-inning games these days, in terms of, you know, do you intentionally walk here? Bunting is rare, but it's used every now and then. And obviously, can hitters adjust? Can they push a runner to third? Can they get him in from third? And I've seen teams, I've seen teams really struggle with that in the first half of the season, but lately, whenever I see an extra in the game, I'll go turn it, you'll get it on MLB.TV just to see how managers are approaching it.
Yeah.
The smart managers, like a Kevin Cash, or the guys that are really progressive and stuff like that. And you can see hitters, it feels like, you can see hitters start to adjust And rather than three big hacks and a strikeout and not moving a runner, at least trying to, you know, put the ball in play, or at least, you know, put it in play on the right side, or things like that. So that's, to me, that's one of the, maybe the one thing I like about the extra inning rule.
Final thoughts, Rich. We're on a Labor Day, and a couple Hall of Famers have passed, and I know you've covered them, and you've read about them, you followed them, Tom Seaver and Lou Brock. Final thoughts today on both these gentlemen on and off the field and the Hall of Fame. Have lost two great players.
Well, when I was a kid growing up, Lou Brock was awesome. I always confused him, you know, as a kid, you know, you sometimes get confused. I did. I always confused him with Lou Rawls because they both had that smooth voice. Lou Brock was, you know, I mean, and Lou Brock you don't see those type of guys now with the stolen bases.
Yeah. Not going to happen.
I was impressed with him was his post-career ambassadorship in the game of baseball. Every time we would go into St. Louis, whether I was with the Mariners or with the Marlins, Lou Brock was usually there. And if it was a Hall of Fame weekend, he'd have the red coat on. He was always generous.
I just love those red coats. I think that's so classic.
Yeah. He was beloved by everybody in that community. I'm a big Lou Brock fan. Tom Seaver, I grew up as a fan watching him pitch and all of that, but I really got a chance to know a bit more about him. My partner in Miami was Tommy Hutton.
Okay.
And Hutt played in that same era.
Mm-hmm.
And in Tommy's, 11-year career, he was a pinch hitter, a part-time guy. He absolutely owned Tom Seaver. I mean, to the point where when he would play against Seaver or face Seaver, he'd be hitting third or fourth in the lineup. And I always remember when we would go into New York with the Mets, or if we were in the Bay Area and Seaver was around, Seaver would always come by to say hi to Tommy. And there was that twinkle in his eye, like, you owned me. you had it. And there are guys that, that carry that as a grudge through their career. That it's like, I hate that guy. Oh, boy, I hate that guy.
But it's true. Seaver, you put the happy face on, you shake his hand, and you're walking away going, oh, man, that guy owned me. You're absolutely right.
But Tom, when I was around Tommy Hutton and we ran into Seaver, Seaver always made a point to come over and talk to Tommy with a little twinkle in his eye. And mm-hmm. People in the Bay Area up in Napa certainly got to know him as well. He was just he lived up to that nickname of Tom Terrific.
He sure did. Well, Rich Waltz, again, thank you for your time on a Labor Day. It's always great talking baseball with you. And you be safe and be well over the next couple of months. I know NFL's starting for you soon, and it's always a great time. I hope you're well. And, again, we'll talk again on KNBR, the sports leader.
Well, say hi to Marty and Raph and everybody down there, and good luck to the Giants. I'll be rooting for them for the next 2-3 weeks.
Rich, thanks again for your time, and be safe on a Labor Day weekend. All right, I was Rich Waltz, the leader, sports leader. We're going to be right back on Talking Baseball. Bill Lasky in for Marty Lurie. We'll be right back.